You're listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick, sponsored by Philanthropic Impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world, welcome back to The Caring Economy with me, your host, Toby Usnick. Today, we have the honor of hosting a visionary in the realm of modern philanthropy, Mr. Tim Cadigan, the CEO of GoFundMe. Tim has been at the helm of GoFundMe since March 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, steering the platform towards an unprecedented success and transforming it into the global leader in modern giving. His tenure has seen the 2022 acquisition of Klassi, which is a leading nonprofit software company, which has culminated in a combined $25 billion US raised since 2010 by the companies, touching countless lives and causes, which we're going to explore today. The impact is quite robust and impressive. A staunch believer in the innate human desire to help others, Tim envisions GoFundMe as the most helpful place in the world. His leadership has not only driven the platform's success, but has also sparked discussions and reflections on the state of giving in our society. Today, we have the privilege of delving into GoFundMe's journey, especially focusing on their recent year in help report. This year alone, with 39 million donations, the platform witnessed over 30 million people giving or receiving help. We're eager to explore the insights gained from his report and learn about the evolving landscape of generosity. Tim Cadigan, welcome to The Caring Economy.
Hey, Toby, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
We were joking at the beginning before we went on. I work for the British Consulate by day, and I love your accent. So we ask our guests, give us a 2 or 3 minute digest of growing up, presumably a Brit, and how you found your way in life and in your career.
Yes, I have a little bit of a mid-Atlantic accent now. I'll explain that. So yes, born and brought up in the UK in the South in a county called Dorset, which is a beautiful rural county. Spent my first 18 years there, then went to university in London, then ended up continuing at university. Education was a big theme, so did a master's at Oxford, then got into business, ended up coming to the West Coast to go to business school, and that was 96 to 98, just as the internet was really taking off, and it was just a fascinating time to be here and made it very hard to leave. So I subsequently got stuck into technology in a variety of different roles for a period at Yahoo and then a period with my own company, which was in advertising technology. And then, as you mentioned in your very generous introduction, I started at GoFundMe at a very interesting time, March 2020, and I've been there since then. So that is my very quick journey through life.
When you were, I guess, in graduate school, I was actually running communications at a digital startup, Razorfish, which is...
Oh, sure. Around. Yes. Yeah. Great.
Some battle scars there, but you stayed with tech and I actually went to the New York Times from there into publishing. Any company is a digital company anyway, wouldn't you say?
Pretty much. Yeah. I think any company that wants to engage a wide set of people needs to have a presence and be able to interact digitally.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with GoFundMe, can you give us sort of a general overview of the platform, what it is, what it does, its mission, and then perhaps a sort of a brief summary of its journey, just as you shared a little bit about your life journey?
Yeah, sure. I mean, essentially, it's very simple. GoFundMe is a place that people can come together to help each other. They can do that in an almost infinite variety of different ways. So one person's help may be, hey, I want to go and do a mission abroad for a year. Another person's may be, we're dealing with a difficult medical situation in the family. We need help and support. Another may be, you know, I'm looking to open a bookstore and I'd like to reach out to the community and help me with that. So it takes a myriad of different forms, but the heart of it is people want to help each other, and they want to come together to help those that they know, they care about, that they love, do the things or deal with the things that are important in their lives.
If you watch news here in the US, you see frequent references to GoFundMe, right? Because people usually, when sad things happen and they need to fundraising, a group will pull together an effort through GoFundMe. But I wonder if that's the typical kind of GoFundMe, or is there, maybe we should just jump into the actual year in help report, which probably demographics, areas of philanthropy, matchmaking, and that sort of thing.
you can probably think of a crazy example and it's happened on GoFundMe. You can think that there are the more obvious situations, and then there are almost a huge tale of different situations that come up. But to give you a few highlights, and you mentioned some of the top line statistics, but they're so significant, I think they bear repeating. So last year, 30 million people either gave or received help on GoFundMe. And that was through 39 million donations. So obviously some people donated more than once, and we're very, very grateful to them. Some of the themes that we saw, natural disasters, as in unfortunately most years, were a significant factor. And we saw over $100 million raised for support in natural disasters. Many people, many listeners will be very familiar with the tragic wildfire in Maui. And that was a very significant activity on our platform. We in fact saw people from over 100 countries contributing to help people there. Another example that people maybe in the US are less familiar with, there were some very significant floods in northern Italy over the summer. Mm-hmm. We saw several million raised to help people there. So those are just sort of two examples. To give you a very different set of scenarios, we saw nearly 100,000 campaigns created to help businesses, generally small businesses. The bookstore example I gave you is a good one. We actually saw about a 15% increase in campaigns for bookstores. Mm-hmm. I think bookstores are a great example of community, because a great local bookstore is a wonderful place. It's a place mm-hmm. often that's either has or is next to a coffee shop. It's a place that has talks. It's a place that brings people together. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing people reach out and say, hey, yes, that's a common community space that I want to support. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing a pattern around some of the needs in society, for sure. Mm-hmm. So a couple of examples there, student lunch debt. Started to see more and more campaigns for student lunch debt, about a 4x increase, in fact, year over year for that. Student loan relief, as you may know, the some of the programs to help with student loans expired in the late fall. And so student loan relief campaigns have gone up about 40% year on year. And then the last example I'll mention in this category was senior care. And as you probably know, given the nature of the podcast, senior care is a huge and pressing and growing challenge, not just in the US, but really in all developed economies, as the demography of our societies changes. And that has increased by multiples over the past year. Like all major consumer platforms, we were not immune to the power of Taylor Swift this year. We saw $13 donations double. Now, $13 is because 13 is her favorite number. And so we saw a lot of activity around that. And we also saw folks activate the fan community. We had a young woman run a campaign for bed nets to deal with malaria, and kind of really tapped into her Swiftie community, and it did really well. So you know, it's a really wide array of different things that people are doing and showing their support for.
Yeah, that's a great one, because not only is Taylor Swift, I guess, moving the Richter scale with her concerts and bouncing, but she's also moving philanthropy.
She is, and she's also, I should say, she's very generous personally. She's a very generous and quite frequent donor on GoFundMe, and we massively appreciate that. But her cultural ripple effects are so broad now. It's fascinating to see that play out.
I was also reminded, I'm in the midst of, I'm almost finished with Barbara Streisand's memoir, and she, 24 is her lucky number. So if you're doing anything in the world of Streisandia, just know.
Great to know. Great to know. That will, yeah.
It weaves throughout her whole life in her book, which is quite a great book.
That's a very high lucky number. That's an interesting
right?
one.
Yeah, right. I know. Are you English only, or is the site available in other countries or in other languages?
Great questions. No, we are available in 19 countries. And I'll just make a distinction here, because yeah. I mentioned people donating from more than 100 countries. You can donate from almost anywhere on the globe. When I say we operate in 19 countries, that means that you can set up an account and withdraw money in those 19 countries. That's where we and the payment processors and banks that support us currently are set up to allow people to disperse the funds. So 19 countries, we are in 6 or 7 languages. I might be one or two off, but all the major European, at least, languages for now. And we're also available in multiple currencies. So see dollars, pounds, euros, and several others.
Bitcoin?
No, not Bitcoin.
I'm glad to hear that. Procedurally, when one interacts with GoFundMe, how do those users know that things are on the up and up, that either they're giving to a good cause or receiving from a credible donor?
100%. I mean, this is absolutely fundamental, because you are expressing support and sharing your care and emotion, and you want to make sure that this is going to the right place. Now, many times, someone who's giving knows the person, but sometimes they don't, and they want that layer of trust and safety, and it's our job to ensure that is there. So we do a sort of a few layers in terms of our approach. The first is we have a team dedicated to trust and safety, and that team has seen a lot. As you mentioned in the intro, you know, we've seen $25 billion raised, millions of campaigns. So we've seen a lot of usage, including some things that, you know, we don't consider legitimate. And so we have built up a body of expertise and data that allows us to inform that team to help make good decisions. That team is, of course, supported by technology. Some of that technology is proprietary in terms of what we're looking for, what we consider is good usage and what we consider is misuse. And some of that are third-party technologies that are expert in that. So that's kind of layer number two. The third layer, and one that actually I find a lot of people don't realize about GoFundMe, is we run on third-party payment processors, folks like Adyen and Stripe. And so every single dollar goes through our payment partners. GoFundMe doesn't hold any money. It all goes through a third-party payment processor / ultimately a bank. And that creates almost like an escrow situation. That really keeps that safe. And those institutions do their verification as well as our verification. So essentially, when someone is raising money and receiving it, they're going through two layers. They're going through the GoFundMe verification process, and then they're going through the payment process, financial institution process. Mm-hmm. So that sort of is sort of double security. And then the final layer that we offer to everybody is our GoFundMe guarantee, which is available to everybody. And so essentially, if there is a problem, which happens very rarely, you get your money back for any dollar donation for a year worldwide. So that's the most, by far the most comprehensive guarantee program that anyone in the wider industry has.
Yeah, and very accessible, because you're digitally available and very simple in the sense of process for getting things done. So your business model, do you take a flat fee for each transaction, or do you take a percentage of what the payment systems take in, or
how? So we thought carefully about this, because the most important thing to us, given what we do, given the focus on enabling help, is how do we get as much money as possible to the recipient? Because that is the person in need. That's the person asking for help. So the way it works is, when I donate $100, all that gets taken out is the standard payment processing transaction fees, which in our world is 2.9% plus 30 cents for the transaction. Mm-hmm. That's it. So if I give $100, the person who's receiving that money gets essentially 97. Mm-hmm. That's it for fees.
But what about the payment partner? Do they also take a similar fee, or? Well,
we're paying them. Yeah. Right. So most of that fee, you can imagine where it's going to them, right? The way we make money and the way we run our company essentially is we ask for tips. So let's say I'm giving $100. We say, hey, can you give us a tip? We make a suggestion. That suggestion can vary. And then people decide, do they want to give us a tip or not? Mm-hmm. And that's completely at their discretion. That's how we run the company.
The last sort of technical question is just here in the US, where there's tax incentives to be philanthropic. Do you generate statements for people to use for their tax filings where they've donated to a nonprofit cause, or how does that
Yeah, work? Everybody gets a receipt. In the case of a donation to an individual, it's not tax deductible. because it's not a 501c3 institution. In the case of when someone is raising on GoFundMe for a charity, you get a receipt, and that is a tax-deductible donation. And actually, those payments go through the PayPal Giving Fund. So it maps to how the rest of the world works around this stuff. We would love, I'll just note, we would love to figure out a way whereby people's generous contributions to individuals could be tax deductible. But that's not currently the way the tax code works.
I can imagine how difficult that would be from a regulatory perspective. Ladies and gentlemen, again today on The Caring Economy, we're really grateful to have Tim Cadigan with us. He's the CEO of the giving and philanthropic platform GoFundMe. Last year, they were processing 39 million donations alone and affecting the lives of 30 million people worldwide. Tim, I know also along the way, I think in 2022, you also oversaw an acquisition. And I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about that. That was Klassi, I believe, in 2022.
Yes, happy to. So Klassi is a leading provider of software to nonprofit organizations. So really, if you step back, what does GoFundMe do? GoFundMe enables people to help each other by primarily connecting individuals to individuals. What Klassi does is it helps people help each other, but it does that primarily through enabling organizations such as World Central Kitchen or City of Hope or Shriners or the Salvation Army to receive the support of people like you being listeners to this program. The interesting part of that and the central thesis is at the end of the day, the supporters on both sides are individual donors. Mm-hmm. And individual donors want to help individuals and they want to help organizations. And sometimes they may be the two sides of the same issue, which is I may have a friend who's battling with cancer and I may want to support them directly, mm-hmm. but I may also want to support the institutions that are working on therapeutics and potentially cures for that. Actually, just yesterday, I went on a client visit to City of Hope, which is a very well-regarded hospital and research facility here in LA that hopefully people have heard of. And we were talking about exactly that. How do we help connect the dots between the individual activities and how to get people, even more people, connected to the cause that they're working on, which is, you know, amazing work. You know, this is the institution that created synthetic insulin, like invented it, for example. So that pairing, we think, has a tremendous potential.
When you're talking about entities, I'm thinking about corporations that will often do matching gifts and things for their employees. I wonder, do you do partnerships or formal relationships with corporations that you're their preferred charitable facility for their employees?
Love the question. So far, only very little. It's something that we are looking into mm-hmm. this year. It's actually one of our priorities is to get better at partnering. Mm-hmm. Very much along the lines that you just mentioned, because we don't do enough of that. And we're really keen to do more. We have seen a variety of companies get involved in certain GoFundMe campaigns, for example. So you may remember that during the first year of the Ukraine war, Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher set up a campaign. And that was somewhat of a collaboration between GoFundMe, where they ran the campaign, and Airbnb, and it was Airbnb's philanthropic arm that was helping house people, refugees, mm-hmm. And half the funds were going to that cause. So we have had some individual projects, but we haven't yet really developed a more programmatic approach to those kinds of partnerships, and we think it's a tremendous opportunity. We're leaning into that.
Maybe it's from my experience, having often been the person running those responses to usually natural disasters, whether it was the New York Times or Christie's or American Express, you usually would, the corporation would pick a handful of agencies at most, like Red Cross would be a typical one, or locally based resources that are the nonprofits, you know, the registered nonprofits to run things through. But for individuals like Ashton Kutcher, it makes sense, right? Because if they haven't got a foundation that's established, then they probably are more likely to want to work with you, right? Because you offer what they can't, or they don't have.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that we are good at because of a lot of experience is handling crises and responding very quickly to those and having a very robust playbook, which is actually very analogous to, you know, government agencies that handle crises and their sort of incident response frameworks, in terms of standing up an approach that engages with the folks on the ground, with the local authorities. For instance, in the case of Lahaina, Maui, mm-hmm. we were very closely tied in with the mayor, the local community, the first responders, with FEMA. So it's a set of capabilities that we built up, which then allow people who want to come and help to plug right into that. And actually, I should mention here, we have a sister organization called GoFundMe.org, which is a 501c3, mm-hmm. and we do a variety of programs there, in which we do partner with some major institutions and some major organizations. We have worked with Oprah's organization, we have worked with Michelle Obama, and a variety of other big groups, because you can generate the more tax-efficient, more structured approach there. Welcome.us is another big program that we've been working with over the past couple of years, particularly to help with Afghan refugees in the wake of our exit from there.
You help them tap into that brand recognition, because it does drive interest, I would think, and awareness and probably funding. So you came up through tech, really ad tech, and we were just talking about the acquisition of Classy. If you were to run into, say, a 16-year-old kid in Kansas City, and they said, "What do you do?" What would you say? Are you an entrepreneur? Are you a tech guy? Are you a philanthropist? What if you get pigeonholed? What are you pigeonholed by yourself?
I'm trying to think of that's a well posed question.
Because I know out there, and you're around tech entrepreneurs, it's in the water. So everyone's a tech entrepreneur, I think. I just wonder, particularly for our younger listeners.
What I do is I try and build businesses. Mm-hmm. And I try and, in this case, try and build businesses focused on something that I think is valuable. And what I love about this company and GoFundMe is the thing that we do that is valuable is, I think, so important and has such a important social impact. So my job is to build this business, because that is the way that we can generate even more positive social impact.
So you tell the kid you're a builder of businesses.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do make a bit of a distinction between sort of operators and builders, versus there's a lot of folks who are on the sort of more financial side of the business, in particularly in tech. So I'm definitely an operator, and I definitely think of myself as a builder of businesses. And then there are many components to that, as how do you frame a clear mission and strategy? How do you build a great team? How do you make sure that you have the technology components? How do you do all the classics around prioritization? There's all these blocks that go underneath building. But I think that is ultimately the best thing about creating businesses. And actually, I broadened it. Really, any organization is building something. I think that's the most rewarding thing.
Going back to the business of GoFundMe, so what's sort of been your most hallelujah moment where you knew this is exactly where you needed to be and why you were the person? And conversely, what was perhaps like the most challenging?
Actually, it's sort of the same answer, which is you mentioned that I started in March 2020. So I started on the 2nd of March, and it had just become clear, literally probably in the preceding week, maybe, that COVID was going to be a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so I get here. In my case, I had, you know, 4 days to meet people, and it was moving so fast. By the end of that week, my first big decision was to get everyone to work remotely, which we did over the weekend. But what hit me, and the answer to your question, is there was so much need being expressed on our platform and at such an incredible rate that it was so, so clear, my goodness, like, we have an incredible duty and responsibility to do everything we can to get help to these folks. Because mm-hmm. it was just, I mean, it's beyond obvious. And you saw it happening in ways, you know, I didn't know this, but so it was truly unprecedented. And we saw people asking for help for things that just weren't that normal on GoFundMe. So for example, as we went into shelter in place in many countries, lots of businesses were either letting their employees go or putting them on furlough. And so there were tons of campaigns, I mean, tens of thousands of campaigns for the employees of this bar or this restaurant, or in this case in LA, for the crew of a certain movie or a show, you name it, or music venues. And a lot of times these campaigns were set up not by the business, but by a customer, a patron who's like, I love this pizza restaurant and I'm worried about the team and they're great people and I want to help. You're right in this and you got to get this right. Like now. Now that also was very challenging because we had multiple things happening at the same time. We had a very significant increase in usage. We had a lot of people doing things on GoFundMe that were new. And that's important to understand. I'll give you an example. So small businesses. The small businesses, when you raise money for a small business, it's a little bit more complicated to go through the know your customer process to get verified, to get your money out. That means that the small business owner who maybe didn't create the campaign, they have to get a bunch of paperwork to prove that they are the owner of the business. And they may not be at work. They may have left town during COVID. And so there's complications there. And then we're going through this and our partners, the payment process, are going through this at volumes that have never been seen before. And we and they are not set up for that. We have to figure out how to handle that. And we have to figure that out when no one's in the office anymore.
I can take your point on how it's sort of the answer to the two questions, right? It was the most exciting and thrilling and also the most sort of challenging because it was COVID. And I'm also reminded as we hear other leaders talk on this show, like it almost seems like a fantasy. Like, did that ever really happen? I mean, we all remember the world stopped, right? And it stayed stopped for a very long time. And I think sometimes we're forgetting that it even happened. Of course, you can't. So let's take that lessons or those lessons learned there. And as we look out for the future of GoFundMe, maybe philanthropy writ large, what are you prophesying for the world, if you dare to?
Oh my goodness. Help is part of what makes us human. You know, humans are social beings. A lot of what we do and think about in life is about our relationships with others. And some of that are the hard things, like, you know, we are inclined to conflict and we're also inclined to collaboration and help. It's a fundamental part of being a human being. And so I think that is an important integral part of life. And I think there's sort of two layers to think about this. There is the cycle of life, which is we all start life needing help. We all end life needing help. And then we have periods in between in which we can give help and need help. And that depends on what's happening in your life. Mm-hmm. And that is a permanent cycle and will never change. That's a big part of what we do. And as you pointed out earlier on, there are sad moments there and there are wonderful moments. Mm-hmm. Having a baby, getting married, going on a trip, going to college, and there are all the sad moments. That is life. And we're here to help people come together during that. And then there are events. There are those big, unusual events. They can be man-made crises. They can be natural crises. Those happen too. And I think about those two big categories and how well are we set up to be there when people want to help each other and we're there to enable them to do that, essentially.
Last question for you, Tim. What are your pearls of wisdom or what is your pearl of wisdom for anyone who wants to either be in your shoes when they're older or trying to figure out how to have a more purpose-driven life or career?
I think you sort of got to work out what you're good at and what you want to do and sort of the overlap between those. So, you know, you could be good at some things that you don't necessarily want to do. And you could want to do some things, some of those you might be better suited to and others might be a little bit pie in the sky. And you've sort of got to work out that Venn diagram, like what's that overlap that gives you real meaning. And in my case, you know, while I was working doing advertising technology, I got into doing search and rescue in about 2010. There are about 8 teams in LA County. We all operate under the jurisdiction of LA County Sheriff, but we operate in the mountains here. And for people who don't know LA, we have pretty big mountains. They go up to 10,000 feet. They're very hot in the summer. They're very pretty cold in the winter. They're very steep. They're very loose. They're actually pretty tough. So I got involved in this team. And it's interesting. The team, you know, the motto is may seem similar. It's anywhere in the wilderness that someone needs help. And so we go on, you know, searches, which is where you're looking for someone where we don't know there is, and rescues where we think they know where they are and they're injured. I say I think because often they would turn out to not quite be where you expected. It was completely different from technology, the world of technology, in the sense it's completely analog, a lot of bad info, it's completely physical, a lot of sweat, a lot of cold, a lot of dirt, a lot of crazy situations. But what it showed me is just how rewarding helping people was. And so over time, my way of going through the process I had just outlined was, hey, I think I would love to continue to do the things I like around building companies, which we talked about earlier, but I would love to do that in the context of an organization where its product has a real social impact. And I just felt so lucky and fortunate that the GoFundMe thing came together. Mm-hmm. I was able to come here and be involved in this organization and sort of tap both sides. So, you know, that process of mapping together and being clear with yourself, what is that sweet spot? And then sort of pursuing it, I think is important.
Great advice, Tim Gadigan. If you want to make a donation, you want to propose one, go to GoFundMe.com.
Can I just add one last thing, which is, you mentioned setting up a campaign and donating. Both of those are, you know, could be a bit heavy lift. You may be not up for that. One thing you can do that is incredibly helpful is just share a campaign. So even if you don't have the means to share right now, or sorry, to donate right now, or maybe you don't want to set up a campaign, you can just by drawing attention to the campaign for someone and something that you think is important, you can actually really help that campaign. Mm-hmm. So you become an amplifier and that generates real value. So add that third possible action. It would be wonderful if folks wanted to do that.
Tim Gadigan, thank you so much. It's been great having you, and we look forward to meeting you one day in person.
I would love that. Thanks, Toby. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick. Please share your comments and questions with Toby via Twitter at TUsnick or LinkedIn at Toby Usnick. And thank you for sharing The Caring Economy with your friends and colleagues.